And welcome to another edition of the Padre Cast. This is being recorded on Easter, actually, and we'll be up shortly after. And just want to thank everybody for tuning back in. Again, we're going to be doing this on a weekly basis, being posted on Mondays. So it's something you can look forward to now and expect every Monday. Again, with me is Fred. How are you doing, Fred?
Hey, I'm doing well, Pasta. How are you doing?
Good. How are the forums going?
Pretty good. It's busy right now. Things are starting to pick up. There's always some good discussion going in there. So, just check them out. If you're not a regular, people don't bite. It might be a little hazing when you first get in there, but it's all in good fun.
Yeah. So, bringing up all the sports gaming news for the week, I was just going to do a quick rundown again. And the first on the list, and probably the most discussed of the week, was the news on Madden 11, and EA Sports trying to get the fan base more involved in the game, and they've done that with the vote for the cover athlete, even though it was set up in a way that obviously one guy was going to win no matter. But now they're also doing it with the demo, and you got three choices for the demo to choose. You've got the AFC Championship matchup, the NFC Championship matchup, and the Super Bowl matchup. And last I checked, it was a pretty close race between the two conference championships. And I think that's due to there's a split vote for the Colts and the Saints having two options. And so then you've got which fan base is going to support this, which fan base is going to vote more between New York and Minnesota. And right now it looks like New York might win that, and we might get the AFC Championship game, which is kind of a more unique matchup. Instead of two offenses, two strong offenses, you have the Jets with a strong defense. But the thing most people have been talking about have been the draft day ratings. And so EA's plan this year is to release during the draft rookie ratings, kind of a baseline, and then from there fans can put in their vote, their rating suggestions, and EA will take that and adjust those ratings they had posted based on the results. So originally, actually, Peter Moore announced it in his blog and explained it completely differently, and understandably, people freaked because there's way too much in the way of vote manipulation. And if anybody who follows like the NBA and the All-Star voting knows that fans can't be trusted on these things, right, Fred?
Yeah, I almost wonder, like, what the heck are some of these people thinking? Like, just proving more to me that a lot of fans are basically idiots. And sometimes I wish they would just catch on fire, with some of these voting that they do. But, yeah, I like you brought up in your article, you kind of mentioned about you could just see some of these Cowboy fans or Eagles fans, some of these bigger, more hardcore fan bases just really overrating some of these rookies. And, I really see that happening as well. I know that EA, trying to get fans involved, trying to get gamers involved, but it's just like, I don't know about this, because you're going to be affecting everyone who plays this game.
Yeah, and so I don't know if it was in response to it or if it was just poorly explained the first time, but when Peter Moore announced it, he basically said that what would happen is the average from the fans, and there were really no boundaries set in this announcement. He said the average from the fans would be the baseline, and then Donnie Moore, the ratings guy for Madden, would be adjusting from those numbers. And so the next day, I get an email with clarification based on my article and the commenters. And
the fact that you're on their payroll.
I have to clarify for them. So basically, it's going to be limited. So if Donnie Moore puts out a rating of for Sam Bradford of 80, then the fans will be able to influence that maybe as high as an 85, maybe as low as a 75, but you're not going to get fans being able to make Sam Bradford a 50 or a 98. Mm-hmm. That's good in that sense. I think there's room to have influence and involve the fans without changing completely the outlook of a single player, which you can do if you're flipping ratings between a plus minus 3,
yeah.
Was my suggestion. Because if you take a rookie, say Dez Bryant, going to be pretty good in the game probably regardless, but if you take him, start him at 82, and the fans end up making him 85, he's not going to be Randy Moss all of a sudden. He might be a little better, but it's not going to be something that you significantly see while you're playing the game.
I'd be curious to see what someone like Tim Tebow would be rated, you know, because it seems like a lot of fans hate that guy. So
last year EA brought in Pat White, kind of similar skill set anyways, in terms of also he wasn't going to be starting, he wasn't going to be playing very much, and he started somewhere in the mid-60s. It's probably where we'll see Tebow unless they give him a boost just because they know, you know, whatever team drafts him, their fans might put him into the game more often just because they want to use Tebow. Now, if a lot of people, there's about maybe 10% of people, it'll be the fans of the team that he gets drafted by are going to love Tebow, and they would be rating him 100 if they could. And then every other fan, all 31 teams, fans of those 31 teams would be rating Tebow like 10. So I don't know how they're going to do this necessarily in terms of specifics, if they're going to say, do you think Tim Tebow should be higher or lower, or if they're going to say, give us a number that you think Tim Tebow should be. But it'll be interesting on draft day. Last year was the first time we ever got actual player ratings during the draft, so they're doing that again this year, only now they're bringing the fans in to influence those ratings. And it's kind of, you know, most of the time involving the fans brings a positive reaction from the community. This one kind of upset the community a little bit, and EA, depending on your perspective, either backtracked on it or it was just poorly explained to begin with. So, we also this week got a pretty harsh preview for Backbreaker. It was from Game Informer, and the game comes out May 25th. It's going up against UFC. It's already in a tough enough position as it is. It's non-licensed. All these factors coming into play, and then this preview hits and tears it down, and it really did, because a lot of these things, as much as we, you know, over the 2 to 3 years since this game was announced, as much as we've learned or seen through trailers and various previews, I spent like 2 hours with the developers at E3 last year going over this game. As much as all this has come down the line, there's still so much unknown about the game, and most of what's unknown isn't the tackling engine. It isn't the animations. It isn't the graphics. We see enough in terms of the graphics, but it's the actual football basics, and that's what Game Informer really trashed here, which was the AI, the simplicity of it, but also the fact that the game didn't really come together. And you can sense that, this is a game that's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to appeal to everyone, not just Madden fans, not just football fans. But that fun factor didn't override the areas of the game that was lacking. I've said from the start that Backbreaker, if you have realistic expectations, this could turn out to be a pretty good game. Those expectations have to be, it's going to be, you know, it could be fun. It's not going to be great. It's not going to match Madden in terms of features. It's not going to match it in terms of depth or AI or those type of things. And I don't know that the developers are necessarily actually trying to make this a very comprehensive game. And it's definitely not supposed to be a straight sim game. So I just say, you know, look at this from the right perspective. If you keep lowered expectations, there's a possibility that you're going to be pleasantly surprised by it. And you know what? It may come down to the demo. I point back to UFC last year. There was awareness for the new UFC game, but there's some trepidation anytime a new franchise comes in. Just like any other game that isn't a sequel, you have to convince people to buy it. And that demo hit last year for UFC, and then from then on, it just it exploded. Mm-hmm. I remember, UFC, I'll be getting it and stuff. I played the demo, and it was a blast, and I was sold on that game like 5 minutes in. That's what Backbreaker has to do. It's bring out a very intriguing demo, one that plays well enough and one that gets across the fun factor, and then it might be might do well. Do you have any interest in this game, Fred?
I might have a little bit of interest, and pretty much just comes from it being a new franchise and a new football game, and I'm kind of curious to see how it plays. I think just playing a demo might do that for me. You know, if I play a demo and I'm like, oh, okay, it does have some potential. Mm-hmm. But even then, you know, I think that Madden is good enough for me. And then if, you know, I do get NCAA pretty much every year. So I don't know if there is any room for Backbreaker. And,
right, and that's a great point, because as much as people, as much as the developers and fans of this game who want it to succeed will point and say, you know, it's not meant to compete with Madden, it's not meant to compete with NCAA, it's still competing for dollars, mm-hmm. and it's still releasing on the same day as UFC, which was a huge seller last year. I mean, outside of Madden, it was the highest selling sports game in the United States, so... it's still competing for dollars in the marketplace, so it doesn't really matter in that regard. If somebody buys Madden and NCAA every year, then you're all of a sudden asking this football fan to pay now $120 between those games, plus $50 for Backbreaker, plus tax. You're talking near $200 on a football investment within a 3-month period of time.
Yeah, the only advantage I see for this game releasing when it is, even though it is somewhat competing with the UFC game, is mm-hmm. that it is a football title releasing in, you know, May in mm-hmm. in the spring, and you know, those other games aren't releasing till July and August, and even though it is releasing on the same day as USC, that may not mean that a football fan is going to buy UFC. You know, a
sure.
football fan may buy Backbreaker, but even then, you know, I know that hardcore guys of Madden probably won't buy this game, because I know a lot of them just love playing with real players and real mm-hmm. NFL teams, and this doesn't offer that.
Yeah, and even more than that, and that's a very valid point, is the NFL license and everything that goes into that. But there's a level of comfort, and I know Backbreaker has trying to be accessible, trying to reach people who don't necessarily play football games. There isn't, you know, people who are going to buy a football game have to have some interest in football, and many of those are going to be Madden and NCAA fans, and there's a level of comfort with those games, not only in they kind of know what to expect every year, but the controls and everything are uniform from year to year and from game to game. Backbreaker is completely different, and in some senses that's good. It will offer a fresh feel. It's a totally different take on the game. That could add an element of fun just in itself, but there's a lot of people, especially older gamers, and when I say older, I mean those have been playing for years and years and years, who get to a certain point where they don't want to relearn things. I know Madden is, for most people, they say it hasn't changed much from year to year. It's not what they want it to be, but as someone who hasn't played Madden before, to play Madden is completely complicated and overwhelming. And so Backbreaker's going for that. You know, anybody can play it, jump in and have fun with it. And whether that's going to, you know, whether that's going to work for people who are used to football games already is a big question. And we're probably not going to know until after it's released. But the problem is getting people to actually try it, and that's why a demo is such a big thing. We have next, I put up polls about a week and a half ago, based on the baseball games. So MLB 2K10, MLB 10 The Show. I've been getting the sense, and from various communities and Twitter and all over the place, that the baseball games weren't being received as well. At least MLB 10 The Show wasn't being received as well as MLB 09. And MLB 2K10, while most people had seen it as improving, still maybe wasn't up to where they expect it to be in 2010 after 5 or 6 years on these new consoles. So I put up polls to kind of gauge that. And the sample size, plenty large enough to get an idea here. And while it may not be scientific, it's definitely strong enough to show trends. MLB 2K10, the highest vote number was for the satisfied but disappointed, which didn't surprise me. Satisfied, there are different expectations for these two games, so they should not be compared directly on these numbers, first of all. But most people thought MLB 2K10, I hope it's a better game. I hope it's not the complete piece of crap that it was last year, and then I'll be happy because I don't have another option on the Xbox 360. And that's probably what most people, the way they are seeing this game. It's not a great game. It has a ton of flaws, but there is a fun factor to it that I definitely sensed when I played it. So I can see where this 39% are saying they're satisfied but disappointed. 36% dissatisfied. This is probably people who are still upset about last year, or they just still feel that they are paying $60 for a game that isn't up to par. And then 25% very satisfied. These are people with probably the lowest of all expectations. They probably haven't played MLB The Show before, and so they're happy with their purchase. So that's actually a decent year for MLB 2K10. It's gonna take a few years before they dig out of the hole that they're in, and they may not have enough time to do it with the license expiring in 2 years. The more interesting thing to look at is MLB 10 The Show. It got 42% very satisfied. These are people who, they love the series. I mean, it's been great for a couple of years now. They love it, and any problems with it, they're gonna overlook it because the overall experience is plenty good for them. Satisfied but disappointed. This is a big number here, 36% of people, and I think there's two big reasons for this. The first is problems with this year's game. You had freezes, you had bugs. Online play is still not very good at all. So they go in and they're expecting greatness. Again, difference in expectations between the two games. They're expecting greatness, and they're coming across these stumbling points. But also, the game, I mean, it really hasn't changed much from the last year. If you played MLB 09, MLB 10, not much different. I mean, that's just the things they added, not very compelling, not going to be used by a lot of people. So maybe there's a sense there that it hasn't advanced enough in the year. And then this is the startling number, though, is the 22% dissatisfied. I think last year, if we had done the similar poll last year, we'd be under 10% combined between dissatisfied and satisfied but disappointed. So that's a huge swing. And usually when you get a great game 1 year, it's tough to follow that up because you don't want to change it too much because the formula worked. But at the same time, people are paying another $60. They want more than just new rosters and a few tweaks here and there. So those are interesting to look at, interesting to analyze, and a sign that next year both games are going to have a lot of work to do to convince people to buy the product. Just MLB 10, most people bought it because they loved MLB 09, but there's a significant portion here who maybe are going to be looking for something more. I know we were talking a little bit about this before we started, but you haven't played baseball games in a while, right?
No, I think the last one that I purchased was, what is it, MLB 2K6 maybe, whichever one Jeter was on the cover.
Well, he was on several, yeah.
Okay, well, that one...
It might be seven,
and
too.
It was the one where the game would freeze, like, after the first inning.
That was 06. You couldn't get past the third inning.
Yeah, after that, I was like, man, forget this. I don't even like baseball enough to where I'd waste money on this, and... You know, I wanted to pick up The Show this year because I heard great things about that game, not just from hustling now on the forums, but I actually did hear about that game being good. So I wanted to buy it, and then I saw that article and that poll that you put up, and I thought, I think I'm just going to hold off and just wait for, like, UFC or something. So
yeah, and like I said to you earlier, you know, you didn't play MLB 09. I think there'd be more chance that you'd be impressed by MLB 10 because of that, unless you came across some of these problems that people are having, and unless you were just wanting it to play it online or play in the leagues or something, which are terrible. So, I mean, at this point, maybe it'd be worth picking up if you could get it for a used one or something for a good deal. But otherwise, I can see why you'd want to hold off, and UFC is going to take up a lot of our time, I anticipate, coming up here. So just real quick, I was going to throw out that 2K Sports announced, and this shouldn't be much of a surprise, they're going to support motion controls, PlayStation Move on the PS3, Project Natal, and whatever it ends up officially being named on the 360. A couple points I make towards that is I wonder what they're actually going to do with PlayStation Move, considering they show absolutely no care towards their PS3 gamers already, because in the case of MLB 2K10, it's getting crushed in sales. Hardly anyone buys it on that console. So, I mean, they don't even bother to patch it. So what is there to make you think that they're going to take PlayStation Move for the PS3 and make that some kind of compelling part of their game when MLB 11, the show, will be using PlayStation Move also? I don't have much faith in them doing anything more with that than making a gimmick. Project Natal, it's going to have to be a completely new game, and so I think it's kind of be interesting to see if there's a MLB game specifically for Project Natal. And this was, I don't remember when Natal was first announced, my hope right away was, you know, here's an opportunity for Microsoft as a first party. They can put out a baseball game if they want. Launch an MLB game with Project Natal. I wish Microsoft would do that, but there's probably more chance that 2K Sports will launch a Natal version of MLB 2K11. Finally, talk a little bit about NBA Jam, because there was this little bit of a controversy. Gilbert Arenas was left off the list of players to vote for, to include in the game. I've talked about this on a couple occasions on the website, but I'm kind of irked by the fact that they're even taking voting for these rosters for NBA Jam, because the game's not going to be out till next season. Half these players are going to be in different places anyway, so this voting is really pointless. But they left Arenas off, and that was before he was sentenced, and he's not going to jail or anything. He's suspended the rest of the season, yes, but he'll be back next year. EA's initial response to that was, you know, he's suspended now, he's going through litigation and everything, but he could be added at a later date, and then basically referring to a roster update, which everyone was like, you know, oh, the Wii's going to get roster updates, cool. Well, a couple days later, EA, you know, emailed to clarify, and there's no guarantee that they're going to have roster updates. Also, from previews from a recent event, we find out that it may not even have any online play. And for someone who, okay, I have a Wii. I have hardly ever play it. I love NBA Jam, though. It's absolutely one of my favorite games growing up. I'm still, even though I would prefer this on the PS3 and 360, which it will be sometime next year, even though I'd prefer it there, I was going to, you know, pick it up for the Wii and everything, and just looking forward to that. But as someone who, you know, has grown out of that time period where you play someone in the same room, you know, online plays a critical element to this game. I mean, for a very pure head-to-head game to not have any sort of online play, to me, is crushing. Were you looking forward to NBA Jam at all?
Well, I don't even have a Wii anymore. I got rid of it.
Oh, because, you got rid of it.
Yeah, because it was just, literally was just collecting dust. So, mm-hmm. So I did get rid of it, but I was probably going to pick it up when it does come out on Xbox or PS3.
Yeah.
But, you know, talking about your point with no online play, I really don't understand why it wouldn't. If the system is capable of online play, why wouldn't
sure.
you do that, you know?
And, yeah.
No roster updates, no online play. It seems, wow, I don't even know if I'd want to buy this now, because I could see myself getting very bored with just playing the computer over and over again, you know?
Yeah,
I think we've been spoiled now playing online. I mean, like, I know when you and I are growing up playing NBA Jam, we thought it was the greatest game. We're playing only
yeah.
the computer or someone else who came over. Now that you've experienced
or in the
online,
arcade,
yeah,
yeah.
You're experienced online play, to not have it in a game is
yeah.
I think is really
bad. And there's really no justification for it. You know, online, the Wii is a different console. It's a different set of gamers, obviously, but you still have, you know, Madden on the Wii has online play. Tiger Woods has online play, and they actually function pretty well. Other popular games, I mean, Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers for the Wii are huge online. Mm-hmm. How do you think you can get away with a game like this without having online play? I don't know, and that concerns me that they'd even consider not having online play. But so we'll see what happens with that. They said they have time to change it, but that's typically a response that's given when they just want to temper any people who are going to be upset about it. So that's pretty much the rundown of the sports gaming news for the week. Flip over to entertainment. We've got a few interesting stories going on with the Avengers now, with casting set for Captain America and everything, and Thor's already filming, Iron Man 2 about ready to come out. Marvel's next big project that's starting to get rolling is the Avengers. And the next thing that's got to be said is the director. And so there's reportedly a short list of directors, one of which is Joss Whedon. And this is a pretty interesting choice if they were to go with him, because he doesn't have a real background of successes. I mean, he has some mild successes on TV, but he's also had some that have been cut short. Serenity, which was Firefly, which was a movie for Firefly, didn't perform all that well. It did okay, but it didn't perform all that well. He's never had a huge hit, a massive hit. And so to put him behind such a critical franchise as the Avengers, which is expected to be the culmination of all these comic book movies that are in the works now, it's a little risky. But then again, he does have a history, a comic history. Was working on Wonder Woman before that was shelved, and he has a couple other written some comics and all that. So, and he has the history on working with an ensemble cast on several of these TV shows. So, interesting choice. I don't know if he would be a very popular choice online, but that's not always how they determine these things. Any thoughts on this development?
Well, like you said, it's kind of surprising when you look at his resume. Nothing really stands out as like, oh man, that's a great project he did. You know,
Yeah.
it's a lot of solid things, you know, but nothing major that I would think his name would be attached to such a critical movie. You know, like you said, a lot of these other movies spider off of this particular one, and you know, but again, I usually take the wait and see approach. There's certain guys out there who I'll say, "Oh man, I'm not watching his movie. I know it's just crap when it comes out." But his, you know, I'm willing to give it a chance just to see how well he does or how badly he fails. But yeah, it is definitely surprising.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. I mean, a lot of times studios will float a name out there just to see reaction. They do that a lot with casting, more so than directors. But if there's a short list, be interesting to see who the other guys are. We know it's not going to be Jon Favreau. He doesn't have the time to do it. So we'll see what happens there. We had a couple new trailers this week. We had an updated trailer for the A-Team, which I thought was much better than the original trailer. And then we also had the first one for the Expendables, which features just about every action star from the last 20 years. I know you're definitely interested in the Expendables. I have an A-Team thing. That's another, you know, show that, hey, you know, I grew up with that show. So there's a nostalgia factor there. What do you think about these? And then there's also The Losers, which I'll be seeing a screening of in a couple weeks here, which has a similar theme. So there's these three movies coming out with similar themes. All look pretty good, depending on how serious you want to take them. What do you think of these?
I thought that I've been looking forward to the A-Team as well. Like you said, I grew up on the show. Had the Mr. T, B.A. Baracus doll actually growing up. So, and then you know I'm a UFC fan, so I did want to. I was interested, yeah, to
Rampage.
see how Rampage did. But I mean, you look at the cast in all three of these movies, and
Yeah.
they're pretty big name actors. A-Team, I'm looking forward to. I thought the trailer was good. I like Bradley Cooper, like Liam Neeson. So, looking forward to that. And then, I mean, Expendables. Ever since I heard this movie announced and the cast, I thought, oh my God, this is what, you know. And then, I mean, I can run down the list of names, but the one for me that's really missing, man, is Ken Jeong. You know, I was really hoping I
Oh.
was really hoping a Ken Jeong appearance in this
He's
movie,
too
but.
busy with his giant role in Transformers 3.
Yeah, no, but it does look good. The trailer, you know, there's not you can't say enough about the cast, really. Eric Roberts, you know, Jet Li, Steve Austin, Mickey Rourke, Sly Stallone.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, the list goes on and on.
Schwarzenegger. Yeah, they even it's interesting that trailer they show some guys who are just making cameos. I mean, it isn't like Arnold Schwarzenegger's got a big part in that
No.
movie. They kind of blew their load on that a little bit, but I think they just want to sell it based on all these names, and like it's going to be ridiculous because of that.
Yeah, and then you know the third movie you mentioned, The Losers, that looks pretty good too. I don't know if that's going to be one of these movies that I think, oh, I have to see it.
Right.
But I think it does. If like you said, it depends on how serious you take these movies, and I
Yeah,
think
and
the.
if there's one thing I've learned since I started going to these screenings is studios don't screen movies that they expect to get bad response. So, you know, if they're going to build buzz, they're going to build word of mouth, they're going to do it with the good movies by showing them early, people get out, you know, people like me tweet it, write reviews, good stuff, just like Kick-Ass, which amazing movie. That's why they've had so many screenings to build buzz for that. they know it's good. So having a screening for the losers is a very good sign, in my opinion. And there's also a screening coming up for Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily going to get great response, but it's kind of an interesting choice. You never know with a movie like that. So there's a couple interesting ones coming up, and then we've got some new movies possibly in development. And this still hasn't been confirmed, but apparently Will Smith is considering or agreed to in some way 2 Independence Day sequels. And then we also have a new Godzilla movie in development. So, this was something that had been written about a few months back, Independence Day having a sequel. We didn't know that it was possibly going to be 2. So, I mean, Independence Day, to me, a great movie. It's a little dated now, the effects, which were so heralded back then. They play it on, like, TNT all the time. So it's one of those movies I let play in the background. No matter how many times it's on, it still, you know, keeps my interest a little bit. So, and Will Smith, anything with Will Smith is pretty much automatic blockbuster. What do you think about the idea of 2 of these sequels coming down the line?
Well, I think that, I really liked the first Independence Day. You know, it came out, what was it, like 96 or 95?
Yeah, 98 maybe, 98. I don't know, right in there.
Yeah, yeah. And, I really liked the movie then. And what surprised me was, the talk about this. Is Will Smith going to sign on? And, you know, he's really like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, movie stars in Hollywood when it comes to his movies and stuff. You think about how he was back then. To how far along he's come now. It's like, who would have thought that now would be whether Will Smith is going to be in these movies or not. And, I mean, for me, I would like to see Will Smith in there and definitely Jeff Goldblum. I really like
him. Oh, he's got to be. He's got to be in there.
And, that's the thing that I'd be curious to see what direction the story goes. Do we see what happens? Are people surviving after the alien war? You know, all that stuff. I think because I like the first movie so much, I'd really like to see what direction this goes in. But I really don't think that they could make the movies without Will Smith or Jeff Goldblum. You know, both of them would make the movies even better, you know?
Yeah. And my big question out of this is, Roland Emmerich blew up everything in the world, basically, in 2012. And blew up, you know, before 2012, obviously, 12 years ago, however long ago, it was, Independence Day came out, you know, it was that vision of the White House being blown up.
Yeah.
What can he possibly blow up now that he hasn't already done? I mean, he took out the White House with a with a aircraft carrier.
Yeah. And that was 96. That was 1996 that movie released. So.
Okay, nice. Yeah, yeah. So I want to know what, you know, loves his disaster films. I want to know what he can possibly do now to get our attention, unless it's like we go and blow up their planet. I don't know what, we can't really do any more damage here. Day After Tomorrow also, I mean, he froze the world. So, I don't know what he's going to do
poor
next.
Earth.
Then Godzilla, you know, typically we'd say, another like reboot, another, how many times are they going to try this? They ruined it in 1998. So here's the 1998 movie I was thinking of, Godzilla. They ruined it with the last one. Terrible movie, obviously.
Oh.
But this is the encouraging thing about it. This is Legendary Pictures who picked up the rights. They were behind 300, The Watchmen, The Hangover, The Dark Knight. So this is a production company that they put out quality. They put out movies that have been well-received.
Yeah.
So there's a little hope because of that. And I think, you know, after Cloverfield kind of did, it almost outdid Godzilla in a different way they took it, more realistic, more on-the-ground approach. They could do that with Godzilla. You just have to, you got Godzilla. If you want to have him wreck the city, okay, but it doesn't have to be, you know, cartoony-like.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what was worse about that one that released.
Terrible.
Yeah, it was either the movie or that P. Diddy song that he did about. Hey, that was terrible.
Hey, you know, it's funny that I worked in a movie theater back then, so we'd have this movie open and it wasn't as big as everybody thought it would be. We had like 3 theaters showing Godzilla, and so as someone who went in to clean the theater afterwards. That kicked on right as the movie ended. So I probably heard, I must have heard that thousands of times.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
Yeah, there was an there was yeah it, you know, I had to I had to act like a, you know, it's not terrible, but it was pretty bad. My genius idea working at the theater back then was we should have put, and they didn't, you know, for some reason people above me didn't buy this. I wanted to put green food coloring in the butter. And it could have been like Godzilla piss on the popcorn. I thought that would have been really cool, but apparently this is not a proper idea. So
yeah,
and that would be a mess to add to it. Nobody wants green hands. So, but it's Godzilla. My other, just while we're on the subject of this, my other brilliant idea was during Titanic, we needed to flood the theater with freezing water. You give the experience. It's the full experience. It's like you got 3D now. You know, who cares? You got to give them the full experience. They now have the seats in some places that rock and react to things happening on the screen. So, yeah.
People using the seat cushions, the flotation devices.
Yeah,
that whole
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that would really sell the movie. Yeah. Maybe that's what they need to do with the
movie. Just immerse yourself into the movie, right?
Yeah. So just before we go here, we're recording this literally like an hour after the news broke that Donovan McNabb has been traded to the Washington Redskins in exchange for the 37th pick and a third or fourth rounder next year, depending on his performance this year. Various guidelines that they've set to determine what it'll be, the third or the fourth pick. Pretty interesting that the deal goes down like this. Teams typically don't trade players within their own division. I remember the outrage, and this is not to the level of Donovan McNabb, but as a Seahawks fan, a few years back, Seahawks traded Daryl Jackson to the 49ers. Seahawks fans were irate, like, oh, he's going to come back and kill us, basically. But in the end, really all that matters is your team getting a better deal? Or is your team getting a deal that's going to help it? So if the Eagles feel that's 37th pick and then a pick next year is going to make their team better because they can slide Kevin Kolb in, then that thought is, you know, who cares what McNabb does for the Redskins? But then there's also the people who think, you know, now you have to face McNabb twice a year. Mm. He's going to come back motivated to kill you. But then again, he does still play for the Redskins. So, I mean, they don't have the receivers that the Eagles had. Maybe that's what they'll do. Well, no, they're going to have to draft offensive line with number 4. Now they don't have a second-round pick, so they won't be able to get an impact wide receiver. But, you know, your team went through a big trade almost the same time last year, picking up Jay Cutler. What do you think, from your perspective, how do you see this trade playing out?
Well, you know, it's from just an outside observer, you know, I really don't like any of the NFC East teams. So
sure, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
You know, I like you said, I was surprised when I heard this that they traded him to not only you know, someone in the division, but the Redskins. All those NFC East teams are hated rivals between each other, it seems.
Yeah.
So they would trade him to the Redskins, so they would have to see him twice that year. But at the same time, I mean, have the Redskins done anything with any of these big names that they end up getting? They always end up being just mediocre or average. And at the same time, I wouldn't mind seeing the Eagles just be bad now and the Redskins be good. But at the same time, I don't really care for the Redskins either.
Yeah, sure.
So it wouldn't matter to me if they continued to just be bad or not. You know, and I think from an Eagles standpoint, if I'm an Eagles fan, and I really do think that Kevin Kolb is the answer, then I would be happy with the trade because you're getting a pretty high draft pick from McNabb, you know. And if Kolb is as good as a lot of these people think they are, then, you know, maybe it's a good trade for them. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, they actually they were talking about this on Friday because Friday was the one-year anniversary of that Jay Cutler trade. And they were saying, okay, knowing what you know now, would you rather have the Bears made the trade? Are you still with the trade that they made? Or would you rather they have waited a year and then give up, you know, a second or third round pick for McNabb and still have your first two round picks from both drafts?
Yeah.
And, I mean, the majority of the people were calling in this ESPN 1000. They were saying that they would still do the Jay Cutler trade. So, you know, it's tough. But, you know, I think that from an Eagles perspective, you know, I don't know how big the drop off is going to be to McNabb, but hey, they got a good draft pick in return. And from the Redskins standpoint, do they finally have a quarterback that they can count on? You know, I don't know, you know.
Well, that's the problem, though, is they're giving up, a significant 37th pick in the draft. You can get a good starter from that spot. Mm-hmm. And you never really know what you're going to get in the draft. But the problem is McNabb, depending on how you look at McNabb, he might be on the decline already. He's, 33? He's going to be 34, I believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got – now, you can't look at Brett Favre and say McNabb's going to be Brett Favre. So you've got, maybe 3, maybe 4 years of top-tier play left. So in a year or two, you're still going to need to draft that quarterback of the future. Now, the thing is, a lot of people were talking about different teams for McNabb. It's like, because of that, you would think he would end up, or the team that would pursue him would be in position to win now, mm-hmm. and they were just lacking a quarterback. The Redskins, I'm not sure if they're there yet. I don't think they are. They got too many problems on the offensive line. They probably need another. They need a dynamic receiver. It's not Santana Moss anymore. They still need they got pass rush last year with Arakpo, but they still have some secondary issues. They could use probably a safety. I don't know if they're there yet. This obviously makes them a better team for the short term. It's just, I don't know. Like when there were, the Eagles floated a rumor, Seahawks were never interested in McNabb, but they floated the rumor that the Seahawks called for about Cobb and McNabb. There's no way team is going to mortgage its future, to get a guy for 3 to 4 years. I mean, Hasselbeck's only 1 year older. Not saying Hasselbeck's playing up to McNabb's level lately, but or because of his injuries and everything, but you can't. That's why they went for Whitehurst instead, because the guy is just going to be, he's 28 now. He's got potential. He's somebody you could possibly build around if he fulfills that potential, but if he does, you're going to get, 7, 8 years out of it or something. So I think this is also another indictment on Jimmy Clausen that the Seahawks have traded for a quarterback. The Redskins have now traded for a quarterback. So Clausen could go 7 to the Browns. I don't think the Browns particularly like him. He could go 9 to the Bills. If he doesn't go to the Bills, he's going to slip maybe into the later half of the first round. It's kind of interesting for somebody who was, the Redskins could have had him at 4 if they wanted him, but they'd rather have McNabb.
Yeah.
So they'll probably just take an offensive tackle now and without their second round pick, try to find.
I'm almost wondering though, like what that says about what the Eagles think of McNabb if they're willing to trade him to a division rival. You know what I mean? It's like, we don't have to worry about that guy, even though we're gonna play him twice. He's not gonna do anything.
Either means, the problem they set themselves up in is all three of their quarterbacks. Nobody gives a crap about Michael Vick anymore. But all three of their quarterbacks are on 1 year in the final year of their deal.
Uh-huh.
So if you don't trade one, you're not going to re-sign both. So, okay, they may have gotten a compensatory pick if McNabb had signed somewhere else next year, like a third or fourth round compensatory pick. But still, you're letting them go practically for nothing. So the idea that they trade one doesn't surprise me. But they have to get Cobb signed long term now, or else they're screwed.
Yeah.
Unless they were to draft Colt McCoy with that number 37 pick or something, which would be that would create hilarity if they now drafted a quarterback.
I almost want to see over the atom bomb cloud over Philly if they just say, let's just say, I'm not basing this off.
This
of
Philadelphia, Philadelphia hates everything.
Right, but let's just say that the Redskins somehow, let's say they do well with McNabb, they make the playoffs, they win a game or here, and then the Eagles struggle with Cobb, and it's like Kevin Cobb, what's going to happen? Are they just going to be irate over this? We should have never given up McNabb.
They'll be calling for Vic.
Yeah, it's going to be drama, and as a fan with no interest in either of those teams, I'll look forward to seeing it either way.
Sure. Yeah, the NFC East been real interesting. The Cowboys cutting Flozell Adams and Ken Hamlin, opening more holes. And, you never really know with that division. They all beat up on each other, and they're all, they're all good teams. Probably even the Redskins last year were decent, but they just played, too tough a schedule. So they always do. It's going to be fascinating. I can guarantee you this is why the NFL schedule still hasn't come out, at least the primetime games and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They were waiting to see if something would happen here. So you guarantee you the first Eagles – Redskins game will be a Sunday night game.
Great.
Yeah, if you, as if we don't get enough NFC East games on prime time anyway. I relish the games that are like the Buccaneers and stuff, just to see somebody different in prime time.
Yeah.
So anyways, that'll probably do it for the show. Typically, we want to keep it. We've talked about keeping it like at a half an hour. There's a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of fun stuff to talk about this week. I got caught up in that. So hopefully, 50 minutes, however long this is. Hope everybody stuck through it, enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. So for Fred, thanks again for joining me, and everyone, take care until next week. Bye.